Sister Holly is asking about Jesus coming from the tribe of Judah. You want to go back to the 49th chapter of Genesis where Jacob blessed the 12 sons. Of course, I'm sure that the Lord knew, you know, ahead of time. Of course, he gives the blessings on all these sons starting in the third verse where he said, Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength and excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. He goes through each one of these sons saying something about them, a small prophecy about what their position in life would be. And of course, Judah, we know that, and of course, God's foreknowledge. You've got to remember that God can foresee things so much better than man. And Judah, if you remember, became one of the two tribes of division of Israel after, of course, Saul was the first king and then Solomon. And then Solomon's two sons, Rehoboam and Jeroboam, divided the kingdom. Jeroboam pulled away from the nation of Israel, and of course he took 10 kings with him, and it left Judah and Benjamin over the land of Judah and Jerusalem. Of course, Jerusalem was the chosen place of God for where the temple was to be built. And God's foreknowledge, no question that he knew and foresaw what was going to take place, that these two divided kingdoms would rise up out of Israel. Of course, Jeroboam and Rehoboam, did any of you ever have any trouble remembering which one was the righteous? Let me tell you how to always remember it. Thank you, Brother Keith. Just remember, if you can remember Rehoboam and Jeroboam, that was the two brothers. Rehoboam starts with an R. He was the right king. He was the righteous. He was the right one that stayed in Israel, stayed in Judah, and stayed with Jerusalem, with worshiping God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Jeroboam was the brother that pulled away. He set up his own priesthood, which were not of the Levites. He set up worshiping false gods in Bethel and where was the capital of Israel? I've got to get my mind working here. I want to say Shunem, but it wasn't that. If you can, one of you brethren, look that up for us. The summer capital of Israel, and then there was a winter. Israel. I'm talking about the nation of Israel, separate, the northern kingdom. The southern kingdom of Judah was, of course, remained Jerusalem, and of course, the temple. They continued to have temple worship. But Jeroboam pulled the whole nation of Israel away from temple worship. He was afraid that the people of Israel, of his kingdom, would go back to Judah, Samaria. Thank you. I don't know why I couldn't think of that, because we know that, you know, Samaria, you remember when Jesus met the little Samaritan woman at the well, he said she was amazed that he would have anything to do with a Samaritan. But you remember her, he did talk to her. He asked her, he told her if she knew who was asking her for a drink, that, how did he say that? Said she had, she didn't realize, of course, that he was the Messiah. But he said he would give her a drink that she would thirst no more. And then he began to talk to her, and then she went to town and told people, come see a man that told me all the things, you know, everything about my life. He began to, but he, one of the things he told her is, he said, you worship you know not what. He was letting her know that they weren't, you know, in other words, the children of Judah and Benjamin wouldn't have anything to do with the Samaritans because they had turned away from God, even though they were children of Abraham. They turned away from God. Somebody may come up with the winter. There was a winter house for the kings of Israel. I can't get that in my mind right now, but in the wintertime they would go there, and it, but in the main capital was Samaria. Anyway, of course, when, you know, when it came time that God put Israel under Babylonian captivity because of their disobedience and their idolatry, Babylon carried them away and overthrew that nation. They first went into captivity, and then Judah, eventually Judah even went into captivity of Babylon, and they were there, of course, 70 years before God began to deal with their hearts to go back to Jerusalem and restore the temple. And from that time on, there wasn't any divided kingdom anymore. But anyway, my point in this is that that Judah produced, David became the king of Judah, and he was a righteous king, and the line of Judean kings came out of Judah, and of course eventually produced Christ was a type of a priestly king. There was God made a change in Judah becoming he didn't bring him out of the priesthood of Levi to become a high priest, but he brought him out of the tribe of Judah to fulfill a type of the king over God's heritage, that he was not only a king, but he was a king and priest. We might could get here, some of y'all, since we're just working off of a question here off the top of our mind, but the scripture, I think it's in Deuteronomy, where we were to be a kingdom of priests, Let me see if I can get that for you. Some of you theologians out there can help me out. Let's try Exodus 19. See if that's what I'm thinking of. I thought it was in Deuteronomy, but I think it is in there too. But sixth verse, Shechem? I don't think that's right. Somebody could look it up. Look up Shechem. It'll tell you if it was the northern kingdom's winter capital or the house of the king. But in Exodus 19:6, let's just start back in the first verse. It said, in the third month when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they into the wilderness of Sinai. For they were departed from Rephidim and were come to the desert of Sinai and had pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel camped before the mount. And Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called unto him out of the mountain, saying, thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did unto the Egyptians and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. Moses came and called the elders of the people and laid before their faces all these words which the Lord commanded him. So here he told them that they would be a kingdom of priests. If you go to the book of Revelations in the back of the Bible, and the fifth chapter. Now here in the fifth chapter of the book of Revelation, John is in the fourth and fifth chapters of the book of Revelation. John is dealing with the future. His vision was, let me just say this. Some of you brethren can help study on it. But in my study of the book of Revelation and my current understanding, there's two different let's see how to say that. There's two different datings. There's two different thoughts. There's two different lines of thought on the date that the book of Revelation was written. In one date, I've done quite a bit of study on this, and this is sort of, it's really interesting to me that it winds up being this way. Of course, the more widely accepted date is AD 95 and 96. The other date theory, there's absolutely no proof of the date, but the other date theory is that it was written prior to AD 70. What's unique about that date theory is that everything I've ever studied on that theory of dating the writing of the book of Revelation is that everyone that holds that theory of its date thinks that the book of Revelation was fulfilled before AD 70. Everything I've been able to find on it, I'll put it that way. Which to me is completely impossible for the book of Revelation to be fulfilled. I mean, I've read on it and I see how they're trying to use all that, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. However, I've come to the conclusion that the book was written before AD 70, probably in AD 67 or 60, early in 68. And that in the first chapter of the book of Revelation, where it says that I'm going to show you in the very first three verses there, he says that I'm going to show you things that must shortly come to pass. Well, if you take the AD 95, 96 theory, there's nothing that shortly came to pass after those dates in the history that you can find. What did shortly come to pass after AD 68 was AD 70. And it says, and he's telling him to write the seven churches of Asia, for he said the time is at hand. And his writing to those seven churches are warnings and edifications and promises that if they'll overcome, they can be a part of the bride. I don't see any way that they could overcome after AD 70 because the church went into darkness and there was so much truth lost. So I think God was telling the seven churches of Asia, or the Lord was, that you still have time to overcome. But these things you need to do to correct the things that's wrong among you. You still have a candlestick, sevenfold light, and you still have time. But the time is short, and you've got to have to overcome right away because I'm fixing to destroy Israel. I'm fixing to bring judgment. My wrath's fixing to be pouring out. You're not going to be able to overcome after that. The world's going to be in total upheaval. That known world back there. After John wrote the seven churches these letters, he started out the fourth chapter by saying, "Then I heard a voice in heaven speaking to me, saying like unto a trumpet, saying unto me, come up hither, and I'll show thee things which must shortly be here, which must be hereafter, not shortly, but hereafter." So now he's going to show him the future after AD 70, and from chapter 4 through 22 is all the future of the Gentile churches. He's showing him the, you know, what's going to be in the future, and John has already saw the church. He's already saw the church fall away. And go, it's not completely fell away at the time he's writing this, but if you go back and read 1 John, his writings, he tells them, you know, believe not every spirit, for many false prophets have gone out into the world. Of course, Peter warns this, Paul warns it, shows the church is going to fall away, and the church would go into darkness, and that took place, and of course, the gospel was taken from the Jews, which God had prepared for 2,000 years for the harvest of that world. And now he's moving the gospel over and giving it to the Gentiles who are very unlearned and cannot understand the same things the Jews would understand of 2,000 years of knowing the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so God's now going to work with the Gentiles for 2,000 years to bring us to a place of harvest. And here we are down in 2013, so we know we're getting down in the end of the Gentile age, and another harvest, another judgment, another time of God's wrath being poured out to judge this world. but also a time of gathering the remainder of His bride together. So in Revelations 4 and 5, John has seen the church go from its glorious height of the sevenfold light and beginning to wane, and seeing that that's coming to a close. But in this, and in his revelation that Christ sends an angel to him to see, he sees a restored church. In chapters 4 and 5, it's revealing to John a restored church in the end of the Gentile world. Then in chapter 6, he starts with the day of Pentecost and begins to unfold layers after layer. Chapter 6 through 22, just showing, always going back with a starting date of the day of Pentecost and projecting forward to the end of the Gentile world and showing what all in detail what's going to transpire and happen. Not only what has happened, but it catches us up to what is going on right now in this world. And so in chapter 4 here, In chapter 5, of course, he starts off seeing in the right hand of him that sat on the throne a book written within and on the backside, sealed with seven seals. That was written within was the gospel that they had back there in the early church, which included the unfolding of all of the old covenant, blended with the purpose of God that was in Christ. That was written within. They had it. But then he sees it on the backside, which is that that followed. And that is this writing of the book of Revelation, which is the future, what followed, what they had back there written. John wrote the future in this book. It's hidden in symbols and prophetical style, but God's beginning to reveal more and more an understanding of it. And, of course, he saw Christ, you know, was found worthy to loose the seals. Verse 9 says, Revelation 5:9 says, "And they sung a new song, saying, Thou art worthy to take the book and open the seals thereof, for Thou wast slain and hast redeemed us to God by the blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation, and hast made us unto God kings and priests, and we shall reign on earth." This is showing the kingly priesthood, or the kingdom that's made up of kings and priests, which, you remember, under the old covenant, there were king tribes of kings. And then there were the priesthood, which is made up of the Levitical priesthood. But God is bringing us into the inheritance that was in Christ, that He was not only a king, but He was also, which was a type, David was a type, his order if you remember, David was not only, he wasn't a priest, he was of the tribe of Judah, but he was a prophet. And he wrote so many of the Davidic Psalms that revealed about Christ. In fact, most of the Psalms that you read is Jesus and God talking to each other, are prophecies about Jesus and foretelling about the Messiah. If when you're reading the Psalms, if you realize this is, most of them are talking about Christ, you'll get a clearer picture and understanding of what's being revealed in that poetic book. And so Jesus came out of Judah. God wouldn't have chose him to come out of the Levites because they didn't have an inheritance. God kept that separated, those two places, until he brought Christ into existence here on the earth. And there's where he began to show the difference of rulership. And also spirituality in the same operation. That's what's supposed to take place in our life. We're to rule and reign with Christ. And of course, in this restored church in the fifth chapter, we're to be a kingdom of priests, which is prophesied in Exodus there. The fourth chapter, if we back up to the fourth chapter, I always thought this was interesting, that when the Lord told him, I'm going to show you things that must be hereafter in verse 1, and then immediately he saw in the Spirit, and behold, a throne was set in heaven. That was the, and one sat on the throne. And he that sat was to look upon like a jasper and sardine stone. There was a rainbow about the throne in sight like unto an emerald. And of course, then there were 24 elders. Of course, I know this is almost kind of like Greek to some of you, probably, if you're just looking at it, and hearing it for the first time. It may even be kind of boring, but to me, it's very exciting, to just get it. I think it's in Exodus 28. Yes, in the and in the 15th verse of Exodus 28, it says, "And thou shalt make the breastplate of judgment." God's given Moses the instruction here for the high priest garment. And the breastplate of judgment with cunning work after the work of the ephod, thou shalt make it of gold, of blue, purple, scarlet, and fine twined linen shalt thou make it. 80 it shall be doubled, a span shall be the length thereof, and a span shall be the breadth thereof. Remember, a span is 3 palm widths. And thou shalt set it in settings of stones, even 4 rows of stones. Then he shows those first row would be sardis, topaz, carbuncle. There shall be the first row. The second row will be emerald, sapphire, and diamond. The third row will be, how you say that, ligure, and agate, and amethyst. The fourth row, beryl and onyx and jasper, there shall be set in gold in their enclosure. He was to wear, and verse 21 said, "And the stones shall be with the names of the children of Israel, 12, according to their names, like the engravings of a signet. Everyone with his name shall there be according to the 12 tribes." So they were to there were to be these 12 stones on the breastplate of the high priest's garment, one a different stone for every tribe, for the name of every tribe. Of course, the name of every tribe was the names of the sons of Jacob. If you notice over here that in verse 3 in Revelation 4, it said, "He that sat on the throne was to look upon like a jasper." The jasper was the fourth row, and jasper was the stone for Judah. And then a sardine stone. And that was the Sardis stone, and that's the firstborn Reuben stone. And so here, over here, I mean, to me, when I've read over this many, many years, I never even considered all this. But what he's showing him is that Christ is the one that's up on the throne, and he's to look upon like a jasper stone. And a sardine stone. That's Judah's stone and Reuben's stone. The firstborn and Judah. Christ was of the tribe of Judah. But he was also, he was the firstborn of God. He was the firstborn of them that slept. And then he said, and there was a rainbow round about the throne, and the sight like unto an emerald. And emerald was the last, which was the baby boy, which was Benjamin, which is a type of the Gentiles. So here we're seeing in the book of Revelation, in a restored church, we're seeing the one that's sitting on the throne. He's a firstborn king of Judah, and he's overruling over the tribe are the Gentiles, Brother Phil.
Emerald starts first, so it's the fourth Judah. And Benjamin would have been the
Jasper. That no. Oh, may have I got that wrong? The second, the third, okay, the fourth was jasper.
Yeah, the very last stone was jasper, so that would have been the...
No, that's the, okay, in the fourth row. Yes, jasper would be Benjamin, and emerald...
Would be Judah.
Would be Judah, excuse me. Thank you for correcting that. So, anyway, it's just amazing that, see, John, he would have understood when he, you know, he would have understood what these stones represented. Because those were the 12 stones of the 12 tribes. So he probably, when he wrote that down or saw that in a vision, he knew right away what that represented. But when you and I read it, it's like, you know, I mean, I don't know how many times I've read about this, you know, just skipped over it. I didn't know what them stones represented or what they meant. But the more understanding and knowledge you get on it, the more sense it makes. My point for bringing it out is the stone of Judah, just showing that Christ came out of the tribe of Judah. God chose Christ in that tribe. Of course, that was the tribe that God foresaw and developed as the Davidic kingdom. David was a type of Christ. God made him all the way down through. There are some interesting things about that. If you remember, David committed adultery with Bathsheba. Bathsheba's, what was the son of Bathsheba that the Davidic, that Christ came out of. Yes, Solomon. So, anyway, you have to, you know, God, you know, the interesting thing about the Bible, he doesn't hide all of the naughty things that took place and all the evil that took place. But God has to work with it. He works with it. It doesn't mean that it can't be, God can't correct the wrongs of man. And the wrongs of man doesn't necessarily thwart the plan of God. God still carries his types through, Jesus was chosen out of the tribe of Judah because it was a type of the Davidic kingdom, which God used to be a picture of Christ's kingdom. And I don't know if any of you brethren, you may want to add something to this. We're going to get about to run out of time. I'm not giving you a lot of time. And Sister Holly asked me this question last week, but I'll have to admit I hadn't had time, or I didn't take the time to study on it. And I'm just kind of shooting from the hip here today, just going over some of these things. But anyway, I hope I've said some things that would add to the understanding of it. There, it's certainly not exhausting the subject by any means. They didn't have any land, inheritance of the land. When Jesus came, the priesthood fell on his shoulders, and he was a kingly priest. And then he no longer did God, you know, utilize different tribes or the tribe of Levites to maintain a priesthood. You know, if you were a Levite, that was just your job. God chose a ministry through being born of Christ, and we're called to be kingly priest with him, to rule and reign with him in his kingdom, to be a part of his staff. Or like in 1 Chronicles 27, you'll see that there were 24,000 staff members every month, different members to function in David's governmental, in the status of his government. And 24,000 every month for 12 months turns out to be 288,000 governmental figures in David's kingdom of all 12 tribes and the millions of people that was in his kingdom. And that represents 144,000 governmental figures that would be taken out of the early church for that would be a part of the bride. It's not a literal number in its fulfillment of the type. It just represents the government of God that's in the bride. But it was a literal number under the King David's kingdom. It was literally 288,000. If you go back to 1 Chronicles 27, you'll see that there was 24,000 members in his staff every month that had a job that they once a month every year had to do. They had to come in and serve the king during that time. And so, and that's a literal 288,000 members. Well, the book of Revelation shows us there's 144,000 in the early church and in the Gentile house. Down here in the latter house, there's 144,000. That just represents the governmental number that makes the bride. God's going to have a government that'll rule and reign with Christ for 1,000 years. There was a governmental number or figure. Those that that overcame sin and became a part of the bride that are to rule and reign with him for 1,000 years during the millennium, taken out of the Jewish harvest, and there'll be another governmental number that will be represent the 144,000 governmental figure of David's kingdom, which together that's the 288,000. That just shows Christ will have a government of righteous overcomers that'll make up the bride out of both the Jewish world and the Gentile world. And of course, Judah, the ensign or the flag of Judah was the lion. Jesus was the lion of the tribe of Judah. And so, and the lion is the ruler of the animal kingdom, isn't it? And so Jesus, he had that capacity to of rulership. Of course, God gave it to him, but he was a lion. He was a type of a lion that, Lion of the tribe of Judah. That's right. All right, that's about as far as I can get on it today. We're running out of time. If I get my mind going, I might could bring more out on it, but it'd probably pay me to study it a little bit more. That's one of them questions, you know, that there's some questions you can't answer in an hour. All right, God bless you. We'll take a break and go upstairs.